a big deal. Without question, the fabric, not only of baseball in this town, but really the fabric of New York. John Sterling is stepping away as the lead radio voice of the Yankees immediately. And here to discuss, he knows him well, ladies and gentlemen. He happens to be the editor of Baseball Digest, the best baseball publication in the business. And not only that, was with the Yankees for a long time in communications and everything else he did in a tremendous way with the media. My good friend, Mr. Rick Cerrone, joins us here on a Tuesday. It's great having you, Rick. And, you know, I thought of you right off the bat when I heard Sterling was stepping away, because I know you can provide some great insight and everything else. I just told the audience, you know, I got into this business because of Sterling. I really did. You know, as a kid, as a little kid, I used to listen to him. I was in my room in Queens, Bayside, where I grew up, and I used to love his sports show, 7 to 10 on WMCA, 570 AM. A lot of people don't remember that. But listen, I'm dating myself a little bit, but that's the show that kind of kicked off, you know, sports shows on radio throughout this country. It was Sterling's show right here in New York. Welcome aboard.
Well, thank you, Jay, and I was going to date myself because I was going to take you back to my first knowledge of John Sterling when he came from, I believe, Baltimore to do a talk show on WMCA radio, and I even know who he replaced on WMCA because I listened to that show.
Yeah,
and that was a former disc jockey by the name, oh, what was his name? It just went out of my head. But John came to New York, took over this radio show. And if I wish we had the tapes, John, because it much different than the John on the air.
Yeah.
For the Yankees. I mean, you know, he was the quintessential talk show host. Much different than his personality. But I ended up meeting John when I was doing my magazine that I had started in my basement, Baseball Quarterly. He was doing baseball games for the Atlanta Braves on TV, I believe. And he wandered through Jack Spector, by the way, was the name of the...
There you go. I remember Spector.
The guy that John replaced.
Yeah.
But, you know, John was doing Atlanta Braves game on, I guess, TBS back then, the Superstation. This is back in this is probably when he had the talk show when I met him. He wandered through the press box, exactly, because it was 1975. It was the game that Elliot Maddox tore up his knee.
Yes.
The Yankees were playing the White Sox in a doubleheader at Shea Stadium, and I went, and John Sterling came sauntering through the press box, and I had to stop him, and I told him what a fan I was of his show, and I said, I have a question for you. If you're a Yankee fan or you're a Met fan, and they trade and the entire team, like they just swap teams, so all my favorite players on the Yankees, you know, Bobby Mercer, they're all on the Mets now, who do I root for? And John was like, well, that's a very interesting question. I wish I had gotten it on the air. I think you root for the laundry. You root for the uniform. So you'd still root for the Yankees, even if they were flooded with all the Mets. Anyway, I always remember. I always kid him about that. I said, if he wasn't nice to me, I would have ended my career there. But, you know, I was with John. You know, I knew John, obviously, before I got the Yankee job. He was... obviously in 96 doing the games on the radio with Michael Kay as booth mate, his color commentator. And we were together for the Yankees with 11 years. And because I had a great relationship with our manager, Joe Torre, and Joe loved John. So we had countless, over 11 years, it had to be over 100 dinners after games. John wasn't a lunch guy. Joe and I would go to lunch, just the two of us mostly. Sometimes Jose Cardinal would join us in the early years. But we would go shopping or go to a cigar shop or something. But John would join us many times after games. So, you know, we're out ordering dinner at midnight at a fine restaurant that stayed open for Joe or was open. And, you know, we have these wonderful conversations. And John was, look, he John hasn't passed away here. He's basically stepping away to
enjoy
the rest of his life because John is going to be 86 years old, I believe, on July 4th. And, you know, he knew, you know when it's time. DiMaggio knew when it was time. Mantle knew when it was time. The travel was just, the travel in baseball is really overwhelming for a young person. I mean, playing the games. I wasn't playing the games. So I was a lot like John in that. You know, when I got on a plane at 12 at night, from Toronto and flew to Texas or whatever and got off that plane and waited for your bag at 5 a.m. You know, I was in my 40s.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard enough then. I went to spring training for a week just as a, you know, to go from camp to camp and we had some events and things. And after a week, I was like, how did I do this for, you know, for 7 weeks every year and then go, you know, fly from Tampa and start the season in Cleveland or somewhere or Toronto. I did it because I was, you know, 49, not, you know, 69. And John is 85.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just think that he gave it his best go to get through this season with the reduced travel. And after, you know, starting off, and I was very surprised he started the season in Houston. And then I don't even know if he went to Arizona, but, and then came back and did a couple of home games. I think he just decided that, hey, I've had enough. I'm done.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Rick Cerrone with us reminiscing. And again, he's not gone, folks. Thank goodness. He is still with us on planet Earth. He's stepping out. You know, he's 86, as Rick said. You know, you bring up a guy like Jack Spector. Even that name rings true to me. You know, he used to be the post-game guy for the Mets on good old WHN 1050 there. On the AM dial, Rick, and I used to, you know, as a little kid, again, I was so infatuated with sports talk and broadcast. That's how I got in the business. But it's guys like Spector, you know, who gave you a little half an hour or so after a Mets game in which I'd have the old radio buried under my pillow because I didn't want to let anybody know in my household what I was doing there. I slept in the same room with my brother, older brother. So, in essence, I was very quiet about it, but so intrigued. But you bring up a guy like Spector, you know, it just brings back a ton of memories as well. And it just shows you that end of the industry, how important it was to guys like me.
Well, I don't remember Jack. I remember Jack doing AM radio music, but I can tell you everybody that ever did a Yankee. I remember Bob Gamier's 1 year and, it's kind of funny that Bob Gamier, who had 1 year with the Yankees, I want to say it was 1971, and his home run call was, it's high, it's far, it's gone, you know, which is very much like, it is high, it is far. They're two different, but I always remembered Bob Gamier had a very distinct home run call. He only lasted a year with the Yankees, so for whatever reason. I found out very recently what they paid the announcers back in those days. And I don't know how anybody lived on what they paid them. So maybe that's why they had a parting of the ways. But anyway, you know, John, you know, I remember John doing games on TBS for the Braves. John did basketball. I remember John.
He was very big. You know, Rick, he was very big with the Nets. And his good buddy, I remember, was Kevin Lockery back in the day. You know,
well,
very big in basketball.
I want to say, I know John did hockey. And again, I'm not purporting myself to be a John Sterling, you know, career expert, but I know he did hockey. I know he did the New York Golden Blades.
Yes.
I want to say he did the Islanders because I remember his goal call was Islander goal, Islander goal. So, you know, that's back in the 70s. So look, I'm going to say this, this man has had a phenomenal career. He is an iconic broadcaster in New York, right? I only hope that now that so much attention has been brought to him that the Hall of Fame, when they convene these committees every year to select a Ford Frick Award winner, that he is given serious consideration and wins that award while he can still enjoy it. Because I got to tell you, I've seen the broadcasters from the modern era that are considered, right? You know, I know them all. And I don't believe John was on the last list. He should have been because, you know, Joe Castiglione won from Boston. Very, very, very deserving winner. Pat Hughes the year before from the Cubs. But John is very deserving of that honor. And it's getting to the point where it's a little insulting that he is not getting significant consideration.
I agree with you. Because, you know, you don't want somebody like this ilk to posthumously get an award. You know, you want to make sure he can embrace it, enjoy it. You know, 100%. He should be a shoo-in. It's a no-brainer. Talking with Rick Cerrone here, editor of Baseball Digest. Rick, when did he come up with the Sterlingisms, as I've called it? You know, the great home run call like no one else in baseball. You know, always kind of mixing around the guy's name with some sort of a Sterlingism, some sort of verbiage. You know, just a colorful, lighthearted way of embracing a big hit in a game that which he loved. Well, when did he come up with that whole repertoire?
Well, I mean, he came up with it when I sat him down and said, John, I'm kidding. But, he came up with a lot of it, and, you know, a lot of it's lost to memory. Like, when did they start playing New York, New York after, you know, wins at Yankee Stadium? Well, I remember when they did it, and they only did it after wins. After losses, you heard Bob Shepard, you know, reading the line score. You know, here are the totals. But, you know, and then they started playing all the time. But it's lost. Like, when did it start? Who started it? Whatever. But, you know, they really started in the mid to late 90s. With the name, you know, something for every home run.
Yeah.
Which, you know, listen, put a lot of pressure on himself because, you know, a guy comes up or you get a player in a trade and he hits a home run in his first game and, you know, you got to be prepared. And John had a lot of help. He had a lot of people, you know, in his circle. You know, my good friend Dom Amore from the Hartford Current, Pete Kildare. They went, hey, John, how about this for so-and-so? I gave him three or four and he never used them. He never used them. He never used a lower decker for kind of Falefa. But anyway, I thought it was really good. Andrew Jones, me and Mr. Jones, he's got a thing going on, but he dismissed that. But anyway, you know, it started with Burn Baby Burn.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then it went from there. Someone said, why don't you do one for him? And then the players started, what's mine going to be? Where, you know, and it became a thing. And, you know, look, as Susan said, you know, I mean, he's one of a kind. You know, there's nobody else that you would compare John Sterling to. That, you know, well, he's like this person. Well, no, he's not.
No, there'll never be another one like him. I'll tell you that, Rick. Never. And you know, how about firsts, right? As I said, you know, Sterling, the first guy to do sports talk, and of course, Susan Waldman. You know, uttering the first words on the great WFAN. Back in 1987 and coming together, you know, the compañero, as John described her during every broadcast. What a combination that was. And I'll tell you another thing that'll live on forever. That's baseball, Susan. I mean, that is verbiage that we will never forget. If you listen to the broadcast and everything else and, you know, Sterling and everything that goes around these two. That was quite a combo.
I got to tell you, if I have a second, one of my favorite. This is John Sterling, okay? If you ever have to describe John Sterling. So we're on a flight to Minnesota. I don't know from where, but we're on, you know, it's a regular plane, and every player or person gets, you know, there are three seats.
Right.
And I'm sitting across the aisle from John, and John's reading his book, as he always does. He didn't listen to electronics or whatever. Like, I had my DVD player, and he's reading a book. And we had a terrible landing, a storm, and we're going all over the place. Players are yelling and cursing, and John is as stoic as ever, just reading his book like it's. And the plane slammed down onto the runway very hard, and all of the oxygen masks came down. They just boom, they're all swaying. And my recollection of John is looking over, and there's John reading that book, and in front of him is the oxygen mask going back and forth like a pendulum. And it was like we were flying in fair weather and the smoothest.
You could tell us.
And everybody else is yelling and screaming and making jokes, and sick jokes, by the way, about, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The disaster plan, New York Yankees, leading off for the disaster plan. And they would come up with all these players that would be off the Yankees. But that was, and another one is, you know, he would call me once, and I'd look at my phone, and it would say, John Sterling. Wow, this is going to be interesting that John is. And sometimes he's going, I just read the most fascinating story in your wonderful magazine. I never knew this about so-and-so. But one time he called, and he left a voicemail. Somehow I missed the call, and I, John Sterling, voicemail. And he basically was telling me that I just read a book that, being a Godfather aficionado, you are going to love. It's called Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli, and he goes on for 2 or 3 minutes telling me how great this book is. It was like somebody paid him to do a radio spot. It was so professional. So, once again, Leave the Gun, Take the Cannoli by so-and-so. It's available. You can get it at any bookstore. And you, I'm like, this is, I got a key. I kept it for the longest time.
Yeah, yeah. It just seemed like that was John Sterling. You know, if you knew him, you loved him. Never
he
broke character.
Theater. He loved reading books. I used to try to, you know, well, hey, a great book just came out on Tony Benton. Well, I've read it. So,
well, Rick, I can't thank you enough. You know, I just, you know, when I heard it, I was sad, but I was also happy for the guy because, you know, like you said, he's 85, 86, and it's about time he kind of sits back a little and says, you know what? Let me enjoy a little bit with the family and everything else. It's time to go. And it's funny. The guy who, I think I was reading yesterday, the guy who runs Odyssey, you know, which carries a lot of the games and everything else, he said it was just, listen, he knew when he got the call, that was it, because that's how John operated. When it's,
right.
When it was over, you know, he'd tell you, and it was over. So,
well, as Herm Edwards once said, everything and everyone has an expiration date. And time is undefeated. Another famous line from somebody: time is undefeated. And John decided, look, I've got four children,
yep,
and three boys and a lovely daughter, and they're now in their 20s. I think it's time that John's not standing on a tarmac in Detroit at 5 a.m. getting a bag, going to the hotel, going to Comerica Park, doing a game, and doing the same thing to go to another town. At some point, enough's enough. And he's an icon, and he'll certainly be missed, but thankfully I can still talk to him on the phone, so I'm pretty lucky.
There you go. You are indeed. Mr. Rick Cerrone, ladies and gentlemen, we're lucky to have him this morning, and we appreciate Rick. A couple of minutes. We'll have you back on soon talking about the first part of this great season of baseball in play. Can't thank you enough, my friend.
You got it, Jay. Anytime.